Case is submitted.
06-5025, Dennis May, appellate versus Alberto Gonzalez, Attorney General, U.S. Department of Justice. Ms. Jones for the appellate, Ms. Sullivan for the appellate.
May it please the Court, my name is Lisa Jones, I represent Mr. Dennis May, the appellant in this case. Mr. May is here, sitting at the plaintiff's appellate's table. I would ask the Court to have 3 minutes in rebuttal time. Your Honors, the trial court erred in determining that Mr. May did not suffer an adverse employment action under his disparate treatment claim.
Before you get to that, can we go back a little?
Sure.
Just in the record. We have the DEA letter dated May 2, 1996, by Wayne M. Patrick, relating to the false statements and sworn testimony.
And what page on the record is that?
That's pages 394, 97. Do we have anything in the record contradicting the impression left by those pages? I'm talking only about the pages relating to the perjury.
What pages did you say?
394, 97. I mean, to jump ahead, I'll tell you that I found some, that is to say, material from Ladora Knight's deposition, saying that one way or the other, I guess, I'm not sure which part it was put in at the direction of his superior, supervisor.
Your Honor, if I could...
I mean, if that's the way the DEA deals with things, it's a bit disconcerting.
Well, if you could just repeat what your concern about the contrast in the letter?
We have a fairly detailed statement, which, if correct, would give an ordinary reader reason to believe that May had committed perjury. And what I'm wondering about is whether we have anything undermining that. Relates to the Assistant U.S. Attorney's effort to pursue their Giglio obligation.
Whether he committed perjury in the affidavit, whether he committed perjury...
Well, I'll take one or the other. I don't think it helps, really. Right?
Well,
I guess it's sort of, if you commit perjury and then you correct it openly, that would be, to a degree, exculpatory, though I don't think 100%. If you simply say A one day and anti-A the next day, and one of them is false, and we're not 100% sure which one is false, I don't think that helps us much in terms of exculpating someone.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that and I did read Mr. May's preliminary hearing testimony, and At that time, I would submit that there was a reasonable cause to believe that there was an inconsistency with what he testified to at the preliminary
and
hearing.
And it's not a sort of accidental inconsistency, right?
Well, I don't
There's
know.
There's a lot of difference between being 4 or 5 feet away from a drug transaction and sending a confidential informant out into the field, goes out of sight, in due course returns, has a report.
Your Honor,
that's not, you know, mistaking Chevron for Exxon.
Well, Your Honor, the cold record is what it is in terms of that testimony. I was not the prosecutor in that case. I don't know how he was prepared. I don't know what the circumstances of how that preliminary hearing testimony came about.
But the basic question I'm trying to get at is how would an ordinary assistant U.S. attorney with certain obligations respond to the information which is contained in Mr. Patrick's letter?
Your Honor, the issue, and I used to be a prosecutor, and I would submit that it was not necessarily an unfair basis for Mr. O'Malley and Mr. Edwards to request an inquiry about Mr. May's behavior or alleged behavior. But at what point after all of the investigative machinations have gone through?
Well, what are the investigative machinations? We have the letter, and I assume some backup documents, I don't know, to Mr. Fries. And we have his statement, I'm not finding a guilty. No reasoning, no citation of anything. There's nothing there, right? Except a conclusion.
Mr. Fries.
From Mr. Fries.
Who is with the DEA or with OP or with OPR?
I'm not sure. I was going to ask you what his title was. The only title he gives in the letter is deciding official.
He's with the DEA, Your Honor.
Let me just go back on that.
Yes, Your Honor.
The exculpatory theory that one of the things testified to was done under the direction of his supervisor suggests, I would think, it may reduce Mr. May's responsibility. It would seem to me that a responsible DEA would widen the inquiry at that point. Who is this supervisor who, I mean, maybe he got it wrong, but maybe
he
not.
He should have made the inquiry as to the supervisor as opposed to
yes,
Mr. May.
Yes, yes.
Not as opposed to, in addition to. Well, that could very well may be, Your Honor, but I would submit that, notwithstanding your interpretation of the Fries letter, where there is apparent no citation to any authority and maybe
no citation to any evidence.
Nevertheless, moving forward, at the end of the day, there was no perjury charge by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
There was no perjury charge. That's true.
And we're not even talking about the DA. We're talking about the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Right.
There was no grand jury action.
Right.
There was no.
Was there a credible allegation of misconduct? Credible allegation of misconduct. That's the standard.
That's the standard for what, Your Honor?
That's the definition of potential impeachment information under the Giglio policy. I'm not talking about that it has to be perjury, but is there a credible allegation of misconduct?
There was a credible allegation of misconduct.
Okay.
The question, though, is, Your Honor, I would submit, is that where is the line drawn down the line where an acting DEA agent can move forward with his professional career and not have allegations that were not substantiated follow them.
Maybe there's no place. Maybe that's such a breach that you can't recover from it.
And that's what I argued in my brief, is that if it was such a breach, then maybe he should have been terminated. But the fact is that he wasn't. And the government.
I don't think you get mileage out of the argument that the DEA ought to have reacted more severely.
Your Honor, But I'm contrasting how they reacted and in the abstract versus how they actually did react. From the standpoint of, were there other less invasive and more remedial opportunities?
You have to show for at least a number of instances that other people in similar circumstances would have been treated differently. That's the problem you have.
Your Honor, I would.
You have an uphill fight on the, however you pronounce it, Giglio standard. It's not an unreasonable reading of their rule there, and it's not clear that Virginia is even holding him to this, to what Maryland and D.C. were doing. So at least going forward, using your going forward argument, it looks like the dust is maybe settling. I don't know. It's unclear in the record. But in any event, Virginia didn't bite when they were pressed in the last of the cases that we have in this record.
That's
so
correct,
that suggests that the dust is settling. That's part of the answer to your question. But the biggest problem is, so who's treated differently in similar circumstances?
Well, Your Honor, the plaintiff doesn't necessarily have to establish or show comparators. And, Your Honor, again, I was not trial counsel, and it does not appear that relevant comparators were sufficiently proffered to the trial court in which to compare. I would, though, suggest that the comparator, at least one of the comparators that the government attempts to provide, the agent who was working in the IRS and who investigated financial crimes, had some issue with Giglio, and he maintained his professional career as a financial crimes investigator. I would submit
that
those...
That would be true of Mr. Mays, right?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit...
His career is just not testifying in court.
Your Honor, I would submit that that is qualitatively different investigating financial crimes than investigating the drug cases, where most times in financial crimes, the crime is already committed.
Well, but is my impression correct that Virginia is the last place we're looking at, and Virginia has not subscribed to the view of D.C. and Maryland?
Well, Your Honor, the EEO claims are based on the actions of the U.S. attorneys and the DEA in the District of Columbia and in Maryland.
I understand how it's being parsed, but part of the force of your argument, or at least what you're intending to gain some force, is when does it ever end? Well, the answer to that, based on what I'm looking at so far, is that it appears to be ending because he's in a different place now and had a supervisor who wouldn't buy what she was told. And so the last thing we see is there appears to be a change.
Or you can argue, Your Honor, that there's an EEO complaint and there was a civil action filed which stopped the bleeding, so to speak. And I would suggest that O'Malley's behavior, that the last incident where he called Ladora Knight about Mr. May's past behavior, past history, is indicative of what I would submit was pretext of the government's argument of, gee, we need to protect the sanctity of and integrity of our cases. You know, we have an ethical obligation to tell other U.S. attorneys about.
Well, do it for me this way. We agree, don't we, that the government's argument on Giglio, or whatever it is not implausible. That interpretation that underlies some of these actions, forget the actions, is not an implausible interpretation of that precedent, right?
It is not implausible from the first
credible
instant.
Credible allegation of misconduct, right?
It is not, but where the government inconsistently applies that.
Well, we don't know that.
When the government inconsistently applies it to Mr. May, which it has,
I'm sorry,
one U.S. attorney's office has said, One U.S. attorney's office has said that this is Giglio material, another one hasn't.
Let's take it that way, because I want to try and get at something.
Yes, sure.
I understand your argument. So you forget the alleged promotion case, okay? Let's put that aside.
Yes, sir.
So on all of the rest of this, the remedy is what?
The remedy in terms of what he's seeking?
Yeah.
No, I thought you meant the remedy in terms of what the government should have done earlier.
Right. Is that what you mean, Judge?
Both earlier and what are you seeking now? Earlier, what was the failure? And now, forgetting the promotion claim, because I understand that, what are we talking about? I'm trying to understand your theory.
Your Honor, I would suggest that there were less onerous conditions that could have been placed on Mr. May so that the cases could keep their integrity, but at the same time, Mr. May, Agent May, could continue and do the work of a GS-12 and of a GS-13. Yes, Your Honor?
Including testifying.
Well, I would argue that under some circumstances, if there is corroboration for his testimony, that it should have been left to the court. But there were other.
How do you mean the court?
By providing
the government would come forward
with
an
in-camera ruling about his availability or the need to turn over the impeachment information. But I would argue that there were less onerous ways to do it, whether it was by having him as
basically what we've talked about, what we just talked about now.
Yes.
The government coming forward, having him testify, or at least proffering him, and asking telling the judge the record, which may be quite substantial. I mean, we've only seen parts of it.
Yes, sir. But there are other more practical ways in terms of how you investigate criminal cases, particularly drug cases, where you have partners, where during the seizure of evidence you have a corroborating witness view the seizure and the chain of custody. There are myriad of ways that they could handle this.
We don't have any, and I realize your argument on the comparison, you don't have anything to indicate that those options are options that the government has otherwise exercised in other situations, do you? Because otherwise you're asking us to become a personnel regulator, and there's an awful lot of case law that says we can't go there.
I agree, Your Honor.
All right, so the bottom line question is one of discrimination. Are other persons in a similar situation given other alternatives or treated differently? It's not just about whether we can conceive of other ways to do it had we been the managers. It's whether other people who are in a situation where there's a credible allegation of misconduct and you suspend it, so there has to be a credible allegation of misconduct. Are other people treated differently in this circumstance?
Speaking of the suspension, I believe in the Giglio implementation procedures that one of the criteria is a suspension, but it's a 14-day suspension. But I would argue, Your Honor, that lacking comparators, that in a mixed motive, I would argue, matter, where yes, there may have been some indications that there were some impeachment issues with Agent May, but given that there was a failure to impose less onerous conditions on his employment, the fact that instead of getting a fresh start when he goes to Maryland, he is that issue is follows him by the U.S. attorneys in the District of Columbia.
Do you ever do any criminal defense work?
I sure do, Your Honor. Not a lot, but
so how would you react if you're in Maryland and you, by accident, come across information that a witness in a case that you're defending has committed perjury in another district? How would you react?
Well, before or after the case is tried? I mean, if I'm going through my investigation
in the course of trial,
I would ask for a Brady violation or a Giglio violation.
You certainly would.
I most certainly would.
You'd be very disappointed if you didn't get it. Just because the perjury was in another district wouldn't be the slightest bit an obstacle to your motion.
So what happens in Virginia when I try a case in Virginia and this issue comes up?
Same thing.
My point, Your Honor, is very briefly, is again, there were less onerous things that they could have done. A. B. The fact that, and I'll give you an example for the promotion.
In your mind or in a document or by reference to comparison?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
is that these less onerous things are just in your mind. We as intelligent people can think of less onerous things, or is there a personnel policy which suggests less onerous things, or are there comparisons that suggest less onerous things?
Well, I think the comparison, I think the comparison that the government brought up relative to the Donald Temple agent issue, where it appears that they were able to carve out a way for that agent, and again, that was a financial crime case, and I submit that those cases are different from drug cases, but that
what's
they
the
were
difference, a- what's the difference, incidentally?
Well, again,
you still don't want perjured witnesses taking the stand.
But you want a financial crime case. A, the case is already, the crime is already committed, and at that stage, you're just the officer, the agent is just gathering the documents, sending.
But Temple still doesn't testify, right?
Right.
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
But, well, I don't know that. I don't know.
Well, the record.
But according to the record, that's
the record.
The
so
case.
That doesn't help much.
Well, yes, it does because he was able, but because he has been able to flourish in
his. I don't know about
his
flourishing. Flourishing. The question is, what restriction on May, besides not testifying, do you think is such a problem?
Well, the fact that he couldn't testify, I would submit, inhibits almost everything he does as a DEA agent.
Well,
he can't seize drugs. He can't act as an undercover.
He can't develop
the case to the extent that you.
Me, the difference you're pointing to the extent it's a difference, is context. Saying that in this field, having a problem as a possible perjurer is a bigger problem than it is in tax investigation. Well, maybe it is. So what?
Well,
I don't think that has any bearing on whether the government is providing reasonable non-pretextual reasons.
No, I'm not arguing that it's more or less important in a tax case than in a DEA case. What I'm arguing is that, as a practical matter, you can the investigation in a financial case is qualitatively different from an investigation in a DEA
yeah,
case.
Yeah, but the Giglio response would seem to be the same.
Why? I mean, the agent in the financial case. Okay,
you
know,
in
short, Your Honor, I would ask that the court reverse the trial court's judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I think that they're essentially the questions have indicated the critical issue before this court, and that is whether the government had legitimate Giglio concerns when it decided in both Maryland and D.C. excuse me, that it would decline to prosecute cases in which Mr. May was a witness. In response to Judge Williams' question as to whether or not there is any evidence refuting the proposed removal, and that's that
Patrick letter.
The Patrick letter. Clearly there is not. And indeed, if you take a look at the statement of material facts that we filed below, and Mr. May's response thereto, he does not deny the core events of the drug buy at the time in question. Specifically, Your Honor, I can give you that if you would like. I see you looking there.
Yeah, I would.
I believe JA-523.
And that's which? That's the government's?
That's the statement, the government's statement of material facts. I draw your attention to the statement of facts 3 and 4, where it describes the factual circumstances surrounding the buy. And then if you go to JA-538, which is the appellant's response to our statement of material facts.
Yeah.
He doesn't deny it.
Thank you.
And looking at his testimony before the Superior Court, no objective observer could conclude that Mr. May described the events considerably differently.
Well, I'm not hearing them to say that there isn't some Giglio question. I'm hearing them to argue principally that there are other options that could have been two things, other options that could have been used in the beginning, and that why are they still on my case?
Well,
those are the two things that I'm hearing.
Well, in response, clearly it is discretionary with the U.S. Attorney's Office whether or not one would put a witness on the stand with serious Giglio problems. Both Maryland and D.C. have explained that they do not want to go all the way to trial and then have that issue arise.
How long does the Giglio issue last? Is there a policy?
There is no time limit. As I have, and I make no pretense of being any criminal lawyer, but a perusal of the case, the case laws, once that credibility arises, it stays with you. And I'm not aware of any case that limits it, although search not exhaustive. Any of the other options available? He was fully capable, as demonstrated by his subsequent promotion, of performing all sorts of DEA agents. It's not incumbent upon the U.S. Attorney's Office to risk prosecutions to accommodate Mr. May's circumstances within DEA, Your Honor. And I think you adequately pointed out that Mr. May has not identified any comparators, an essential element of his case, and there is absolutely no evidence of pretext, Your Honor. There is one thing I would like to point out.
I mean, how do you explain the D.C. Virginia interactions?
How do I explain O'Malley's telephone conversation?
And then how it all played out.
Yes. That was a joint task force. There was a high risk that the target in D.C. Would be prosecuted. O'Malley was aware of Mr. May's name for his, because he was head of narcotics at the time. The Giglio issue arose. He consulted with his supervisors, called over there every assistant that has reviewed the circumstances, indicates there's an affirmative obligation on the part of an assistant to divulge the Giglio issue to another assistant. There's nothing improper about it whatsoever. Confirmed by Claudia Finn, the Giglio expert.
Well, I hear that, but then how do you explain the response of Virginia?
Oh, I see. Well, all I can say is, according to Ms. Knight and the head of Mr. Hollenhorst, their indication was that that if indeed, if it came to the point where Mr. May would have to testify, they would not rely on DEA's assertion that he was not Giglio'd, but would their ethical obligation would require them to investigate the matter. At the time of the conversation between Mr. O'Malley and Ms. Knight, that investigation had not occurred. It became moot because the case pleaded, Your Honor. And that, at least as of the time the sequence of events in this case stopped, Mr. May had never testified in Virginia, as far as we can tell or the record discloses. So Virginia is yet to be heard about on that score. And, Your Honor, we submit that unless the court has any further questions, that the decision of the district court should be affirmed.
No.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank
you. Ms. Jones, have any time?
No.
We'll give you 30 seconds if you have something to respond to what she said.
No, Your Honor, just that that I would suggest that in terms of when a Giglio issue would kind of rear its head or stop, what I would assume that there would be a balancing of 403. I think it is a balancing of the probative value of that information. If there are any other questions, I would just submit, Your Honor. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Case is submitted.
Stand, please. This honorable court now stands adjourned until 9:30 Thursday.